such sights to show you.
Someone is having a way shittier day than we are.
And we're just like, oh, you're ruining our sound.
Thankfully, I am recording, but...
Oh, wow, we've been going that long?
We've been going for 4 minutes.
Let's just leave the siren in and go.
And we are go for...
We're golden, yay!
Oh, you want to get started? No.
No.
Well, now we have to keep this in, or at least introduce somewhere around here.
Oh my god, hold on.
Are you ready?
Yeah, fuck it, let's go.
Alright, okay. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster, and as always, I am joined by Anthony Fuentes. How are you feeling?
I'm good. We just had 5 minutes of recorded conversation we're not going to use.
None of it, because we're just, like, I'm, like, talking about...
We were
like,
just bullshitting.
Updating my iPhone. Like, really just updating each other on life.
Yeah, you guys don't need to hear all that, but it was fun. It's a good starter. Good flow.
So, we hinted at it last week. First of all, thank you, everyone, for your response on the birds. We're glad you liked it. Sorry it was depressing. We're not going to be depressing today.
No, definitely. This is a surprisingly joyful...
Yes.
Like, gruesome film.
Yes. And right up top, we are back in my apartment. So apologies for, one, any echo, and two, any cat noises.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be some ferocious kittens roaming around here.
They're here, and they love Anthony.
They
so.
Do.
More importantly, one of them loves Anthony's things, so...
She's just eyeballing it right now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's on the prowl.
So let's go ahead and get started. Today, we are talking about Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn, released in 1987.
Ooh, on a very glorious day in 1987. Shut the fuck up. We'll get there. It's not in the script yet. Just saying... But IMDb did give us a synopsis. Let's go ahead and dive right in. Let's see how they did it. So, the lone survivor of an onslaught of flesh-possessing spirits holes up in a cabin with a group of strangers while the demons continue their attack. That's it, yeah.
Technically, yes, that is the movie. But, like, it doesn't encapsulate the impact that is...
Every scene in this film.
Yeah, that is Evil Dead, right? Yeah.
It just doesn't, like, it's, how do you quantify the Evil Dead? You can't.
It cannot be done.
It can't. This is a very unique series, I would say, for sure.
I agree.
Yeah, and this is like its prime level right here. But
so good. I love this franchise.
Right? I mean, it's weird because, like, the first one, I mean, I like the first one, but I feel like it's one of those that just gets better as it goes along.
I agree.
Yeah, it definitely does. This was written by Sam Raimi and Scott Spiegel, who you'll remember if you've listened to the first Evil Dead episode we did. Very, very detailed. So we walked you through these motherfuckers' childhoods and like hard stuff. Now this is later on, deeper into their careers.
Yeah.
So, but same, you know, Scott Spiegel, Sam Raimi, directed by, of course, Sam Raimi, starring our fucking boy Bruce Campbell. The goddamn man.
As rugged and handsome as ever.
I fucking love this guy. Sarah Barry, Dan Hicks, Cassie Wesley, and Richard Domier.
Yeah!
What?
Yay! That was amazing! I was like, Anthony's gonna fucking butcher this. And you did great!
Thank you! See, I can...
You can learn!
I can learn. I'm capable of expansion in my thought. Yeah. So this one, it's budgeted at about $3.6 million. They wanted $4 million. Didn't get it. It released on a very awesome, wonderful, monumentous day in human history. March 13th, 1987, the birthday of myself.
Was this the year you were born, too?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So this was, like, the actual birthday of you.
If it had released at 7 a.m., that would have been me right there.
Right. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
But I'm sure it played at midnight somewhere. But, yeah, my exact birth date was this fucking day right here, and it grossed a little bit more than its budget, $5.9 million.
Hey, better than pretty much a lot of movies we cover.
Like, most of season two, to be honest with you.
So far, most of season two.
We've been covering a lot of flops that turned out okay.
Yeah, and I've already written, I'm already starting to write next week's, definitely better than next week's.
Yeah. Oh, was it one of those?
Oh my gosh, it was bad.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. We'll talk about that next week, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. And we'll hint at it by the end of the episode, but my brain is already like future.
You're like, yeah, talk about Tank. Okay. but of course, last time we left you with the Evil Dead, turned out to be a surprise hit. It was also super controversial with the video nasties and huge scare. A good old moral panic of the early 80s, which happened again in the late 90s. But,
so good.
Yeah, but you know what? Sam Raimi did get a career out of it. However, immediately after, it wasn't as smooth. So, Senorita Webster, can you let us know what happened to Sam Raimi directly after Evil Dead 1?
Yeah, totally. So, funnily enough, so after the success of The Evil Dead, Sam Raimi took a shot at acting. And it went pretty much nowhere.
No, yeah, definitely didn't go anywhere.
So he was on a soap opera, a few ads, and had some minor film roles. Now, as anyone, well, not anyone, but something you might not know, if you have regular acting on a soap opera, you're like fucking set.
Yeah, you're
but
paid.
Like, yeah, you make bank, you are rich, but like apparently not so much. He didn't make the cut. He got killed early on. but he did not want to make an Evil Dead 2, even though there was loads of pressure for him to follow up the controversial hit.
I think he went through a lot of shit for Evil Dead 1, so he's like, let's just put it behind us. He's just
why do it again? Mm-hmm. It's fine.
Yeah,
we're good.
They were saying he legit scoffed at the idea. He's I'm a filmmaker. I'm an actor, okay?
Well, he still had Spider-Man in him, so.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Oh, he was a comic nerd. We went over that last time we did Evil Dead. He's a comic nerd in his core, so yes.
So, publicist Irwin Shapiro, who helped make the first film a success, kept the offer to help produce a sequel on the table should Raimi come around. As far as the acting was going, playing cook number 2 on a movie called Hefties didn't do much for his acting career.
No.
What,
dude? He was way better than cook number 1.
First name cook, last name number 2. Come on now. But Raimi is a filmmaker, and he naturally gravitated back to behind the camera and his ambitions therein.
Yeah,
so.
No, he's a born filmmaker, man.
Definitely.
He wasn't going to be, that's just not going to work out. Cook number 2, no, Raimi is cook number 1 in his heart.
Yeah, he's cook number 1 behind the fucking
behind
camera.
Behind the camera, exactly.
So Raimi began collaborating with Joel and Ethan Coen, who helped edit The Evil Dead and helped create a script for him to direct.
He had the Coen brothers as a resource.
Yeah. I mean, imagine, like, you know, just having them in your back pocket, just like, we got you.
Yeah, and they're still not, like, it yet, so he's like, oh, well, these guys are pretty talented. Okay. Yeah.
So he was impressed by their work on Blood Simple and felt the screenplay for the film was very Hitchcockian.
Yeah, just Hitchcockian is, after our last episode, I'm
gotta
like,
tie it all in.
Yeah.
The script was so good, it completely turned around his opinion of Ethan Coen, who he had once compared to an accountant at Macy's.
Yes, he said he had about as much spark as an accountant at Macy's.
Wonderful.
He did not like him.
So during this time, the Coen brothers and Raimi would live together along with collaborator Scott Spiegel, who wrote The Evil Dead. Actors Frances McDormand, Kathy Bates, and Holly Hunter. Holy fucking shit.
That's a roommate situation right there.
Wow.
They all lived in a house together.
Wow.
They all lived in a fucking house together.
That's amazing.
Dude, Frances McDormand and Kathy Bates is your roommates.
That's so cool.
Oh, dude. They were fighting, you know?
Oh, yeah.
One was the queen bee. I don't know who.
Between Frances McDormand and Kathy Bates.
Definitely not Holly Hunter, but
No, Holly Hunter's like the bottom. I'm going to say Kathy Bates.
Dude, I don't know, dude. Frances McDormand has that RBF down, though. Like, she would just, like, not say words, and Kathy Bates just had that... that's a hard stare down. I don't know.
No, Kathy Bates a screamer. Kathy Bates, like, will whinge purely on volume.
Oh, yeah. Dude, but then I feel Frances McDormand would be able to get her point across very understatedly and just stay still.
Mm.
Just a goddamn rock versus a hurricane. I think it's an unstoppable force between an immovable object situation going on right now.
Okay, I'm going to agree, but I think I'm going to... My vote goes to Kathy Bates.
Okay. Nah, I'm going to go with Kathy Bates also.
Okay.
Misery is kind of the shit. Like, yeah.
Well, I mean, what year? I mean, around this time, so...
In the mid-80s. They haven't got their hits yet, really. Also, from my research, I didn't put this in here, but the house was so wild that, like, they had a hard time writing.
Was it, like, a party house?
I think so.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. They were saying it was a pretty rambunctious establishment for them to all live together.
I wouldn't give to be a fly on the wall.
Seriously.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. Anyway, so because The Evil Dead was so successful, financial backing for the film came pretty quickly, actually. But just as quickly, the team encountered a major reality check. Dun, dun, dun. Studio interference.
Of course. And remember, this is Raimi's not Evil Dead 2 film. Yeah. This is just a Coen Brothers thing he's throwing together.
Yeah. Ugh. So, the film was plagued with major clashes with the studio. Raimi wanted Bruce Campbell, who the film was written for, and Embassy Pictures promptly turned his ass down.
Oh, yeah. Pretty bad.
The lead actress was so high on cocaine, she fired her makeup artist and insisted she do it herself. And the movie went way over budget and over schedule due to some major accounting errors. Ethan Coen could not help with that one.
He only knows the Macy's system. No. It's not...
Yeah, he's only familiar with the Macy's system, unfortunately. the production was so bad that Raimi was locked out of editing, and he swore off working with big-budget producers ever again.
Ha! Yeah.
For sure.
For sure, for sure,
That's,
you know?
Gonna go real well.
Yeah, I'm sure he stuck his guns on that one, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not if Sony has anything to say about it.
It's like, wow, they actually brought it in money bags. Okay.
The film, which was haphazardly given the name Crime Wave.
Yeah, he didn't want to call it that.
Ended up flopping badly, and the few critics that actually saw it hated it as well.
Yeah, dude, this was a bad, bad time for Raimi.
Yeah, a 0 out of 5, I'm sure. As far as Raimi knew, his career was over, but he had one ace in the hole as people really wanted another Evil Dead movie, and Shapiro's offer was still on the table.
Yeah, I remember from watching the documentary about this, people kept asking. Like, they literally, that's what they would bug him for. Like,
If cons were as prevalent now, or then, as they were now, like, every single convention would be like, where's Evil Dead 2? Where's Evil Dead 2? Where the fuck is Evil Dead 2?
Like, oh, Raimi's gonna drop an announcement. Crime Wave, what the fuck is this?
Oh, yeah. Did she do her own makeup?
Yeah. She's all trying to answer questions of the panel. She's like, yeah, you know, that's a really meaty role.
So Raimi agreed to finally make the sequel out of desperation to save his career.
Oh, dude, the pressure cooker situation. Yep.
You know what? Pressure creates greatness.
It does.
As we often say.
From the amount of episodes we've done, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
However, this was Raimi, and he wasn't going to go half-assed about a project because he was forced into it. And he ended up getting a little bit of help from none other than Stephen fucking King.
Oh, yeah.
Are we getting, like, some primo cocaine Steve here?
No. Whoa. No, I think he's coming down from cocaine. No, wait, 87 now. He's...
Cocaine Steve.
He's at the tail end of Cocaine Steve, but he's going hard. He's absolutely going hard.
I mean,
hard.
Really,
like,
you go...
Cocaine Steve! Did you see The Evil Dead? You like The Evil Dead? I like The Evil Dead.
I missed Cocaine Steve.
Cocaine Steve was the best. Anyways, Cocaine Steve and Nigel Neal trying to write together. Well, I think it should write out like this. Like, nah, dude, put demons.
More blood.
More blood.
I thought we got over this.
Yeah, anyways, okay. So Raimi and Shapiro weren't having as easy a time finding funding as they thought they would. Even though they actually already had a script drafted, which was written during the chaos that was the Crime Wave fucking roommate situation with Scott Spiegel.
Yeah.
Way back. So their idea about Ash being forced to kill Deadites in medieval times wasn't as enticing to producers, actually, as it was a far cry from what the first film was about.
So was 3 supposed to be 2?
Yes. Yeah, that was the big goal, was to have Ash killing Deadites in the medieval era.
I mean, we'll get to it.
Yeah,
we'll
they did it. But yeah, they, from their calculations, they needed about $4 million to make the concept work, and no studio was willing to provide that much, to be honest.
Right.
They just weren't. The team was soon approached, however, by producer Dino De Laurentiis, who's a mainstay on this podcast.
Right. I can't tell you where we've named him before, but...
I think it was Halloween 3, actually.
Dino De Laurentiis. Carrie, also, I think.
Carrie, too. Yeah, remember? Dino De La Pizzeria? Refer back to our previous episodes for more very, very, very stereotypical Italian jokes.
I was about to say slight Italian racism.
A little bit. Anyways, so he actually sought out Raimi for a different project. He wanted him to adapt Stephen King's Thinner, which is actually written under a pseudonym, which I forgot the pseudonym, but we've said it a couple times on here. But
oh,
yeah.
Stephen King's?
Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know the pseudonym, but it's I follow a Stephen King meme account on Instagram, and it's hilarious.
You send me that a few times a week.
I think I send you a plethora of Stephen King memes.
Yeah, Stephen King's memes,
But Thinner is one of those few movies that constantly pops up on my fucking Netflix, like, movies you may like. And I'm like, I'm not fucking watching it. I'm not.
It's not a great movie. It's not. But you know what? It was in that era where King's, what do you call? I just have it right here. Yeah. Pseudonym was making more money than regular King.
Wasn't it like Richard or something?
Yeah, it was some shit. But either way, it was becoming just as successful as Stephen King. So he's like, well, this is me, Stephen King. Fuck.
Oh, really? I thought someone, because I thought we discussed this in Misery, where someone just like... reverse Googled it.
They figured it out, yeah. But it was like the writing style was like really, really obvious.
Okay, I was right. Richard Bachman.
Richard Bachman, that's right.
I was right. Thank you. I'll be here all week.
Yep, there you go. Richard Bachman. Anyways, yeah, so he wanted him to do Thinner, written by Richard Bachman / Stephen King. But Raimi actually turned Dino's Italian ass down. But Laurentiis was still open to working with the kid should he come around.
So, of course.
Yeah, he was like, he saw talent. So he knew there was a talent there. Dino Laurentiis, you know, he knows his shit. Dude produces some good ass movies.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he kept Raimi basically offer on the table. And Raimi was like, no, I'm going to blah, 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 blah. I'm not doing Thinner. Anyways, so Stephen King was working on the film Maximum Overdrive. And during the shoot, he had dinner with a crew member. The crew member told King that he had just interviewed for The Evil Dead 2 and that the film was having a very difficult time getting funding, getting off the ground. King had actually written a glowing review that propelled the first film to success at Cannes. So he rushed his fucking ass to the phone and urged Dino De Laurentiis to fund The Evil Dead 2. He said, fuck Thinner, fuck Thinner, fuck my own movie. You need to fund The Evil Dead 2.
That's, wow.
Yeah.
We love dedication.
He probably did it pretty coked up, but I'm sure he was urgent. Yeah.
I mean, he was just, I'm sure this is just like one of those things where he's just like, fuck you guys, I want to see the movie.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
Exactly. Like, oh, I want horror to propel forward. So, yeah, put fucking Evil Dead 2 on screen.
Yeah, Maximum Overdrive isn't exactly in, like, his, like, list of classics.
No, and it's definitely not an Evil Dead 2. I'll tell you that right now.
Also, fun story. There's a young adult novel called Maximum Overdrive, so I always get the two confused, and it's very, like...
That's a significant difference, isn't
it? It's a young adult novel about, like, these, like, mutant children who have wings...
Okay.
And the main character is named Max, so take that as you will. It wasn't good. It wasn't good. I didn't even finish the book, which is rare for me, because normally once I start something, like a book, I have to fucking finish it. I couldn't finish it. I, like, bought it from Costco when I was, like, 12. I was just like, okay, this is dog shit.
Okay, sorry, YA Maximum Overdrive fans. Alex hated that shit.
Oh, yeah. For sure. That's my official consensus as a fucking 24-year-old.
Yeah.
Nearly 12 years after the
Double your lifespan. You're like, yeah, that was bullshit.
And it still stuck with me, didn't it? And I still remember it, and it still causes confusion to this day.
It's okay, because, I mean, your reception for that one story is basically how critics saw the actual Maximum Overdrive in the 80s. So, you know what? The name's cursed. The name's fucking cursed. Anyways, so when it came to Stephen King's pressure, Laurentiis was skeptical. So he had someone draw up figures for the Italian revenue of The Evil Dead. And after one loud Mamma Mia, Laurentiis realized that the global appeal. I gotta finish the sentence. Raimi's first film, and he decided to fund The Evil Dead 2.
You fucking prick. What? You're going to hell.
However, Laurentiis was not willing to give them the full budget they requested, and the team had to settle for the smaller $3.6 million budget, which resulted in them scrapping the medieval horror idea, but they still had enough elements with their script to create a film within the setting of the first film. So,
I mean, sure. We'll get into it.
I'm sure the medieval concept looked different before Army of Darkness.
Up top. I spent the first 30 minutes being like, are we just going to ignore the first movie?
Oh, yeah. we'll get into it. We'll get into why there's a different why.
I know that I don't know why, and I'm sure we'll get into it, but like it took away from my watch. I had to watch it twice because I kept getting like, I was like, are they going to explain? And they never did. And yeah. I was just like, cool. Cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's some fuckery there. So... actually, I think it's right out. They had run into a major problem with their story, as they did not have the rights to the first film, Alex. They didn't have the fucking rights. And they would not be able to put a recap with any clips from the beginning of the film, at the beginning of the film, which was very common, again, for movies in the 80s. You know? You remember Friday the 13th's 12-minute goddamn opening. Yeah. This was needed to catch people up.
Was it?
No, but I mean, they had no faith in their audience anyways. So they got around this by shooting generally the first film over again, but only with Ash and Linda characters.
So only Ash, only Linda, and it was like the briefest brief.
Yeah, it was the Cliff Notes version.
Right.
Yeah.
And as I was watching, I'm like, did Ash, like, I literally thought it was like a true sequel, and I'm like, bruh.
Well, the thing is, like, they actually wanted to have all the actors back, but they just didn't have the money.
Right.
Like, they literally were like that.
The bra was at my cats for like...
Oh, I know. Shit. Yeah. Okay. Just so you know, audience. Yes, that... I turned over to acknowledge that. But yeah, that was towards the cats causing some shit.
I had a thought that I was gonna finish.
Oh, no.
No, my thought was that, like, as I was watching it, I was like, did Ash learn nothing from the first movie? And it turns out no, because technically the first movie didn't happen.
No, definitely not.
So, like, the super iconic scene with, like, his sister. Mm-hmm. And, like, I was just like, bro, really? We're just gonna ignore all that. Like, that. So again, I literally spent the first like 30 minutes. Like, I was just like, so we're really also stoned out of my mind on my dad's couch, just like, did I miss something? I feel like I missed something. Turns out I didn't miss.
No,
something.
No, definitely not. To be fair though, like they went and then reshot it, so they put more effort than like in a Friday the 13th movie where they're like, oh yeah. Nothing that happened to Jason ever actually happened in this one either. So, mm-hmm. Like, they tried. Sam Raimi is a filmmaker.
Of course.
Yeah. But they had a completed script, and the filmmakers were ready to shoot in good old Wadesboro, North Carolina. Goddamn Lina, and for a very, very particular reason in that town, which you'll find out immediately. Alex, let us know how the shoot went.
The reason for filming in Wadesboro, it was pretty simple. It was close to the Wilmington offices of producer... Dino De Laurentiis.
He was being lazy.
Ah, we love a lazy producer.
Yeah, exactly.
The producer initially wanted them to film in Wilmington proper, but the crew was uneasy about being so close to the actual city, or town, whatever, thanks to the studio interference from Crime Wave. So they chose Wadesboro, as it was 3 hours away and just inconvenient enough for frequent visits from Laurentiis.
That's such a good move.
That's such a, like, teenage antics move.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
That is such a, like, Goonies move.
Yeah. What do producers hate? Being mildly inconvenienced. Okay, cool. Let's do it. Let's get them off our asses.
Away, yeah. Just... Like, because if it was 2 hours and 45 minutes away, could rationalize it.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, they could have had Laurentiis there all the time, though. Yeah, Randy wasn't about that shit.
It was that extra 15 minutes that really, yeah. I mean, really, that adds an extra half an hour to your commute every day.
Because if you got to get gas before that, that fucks everything up.
Although, this was in the mid-80s. I think gas was like 15 cents a gallon.
Oh, my God. What a goddamn. We're California here, people.
I do think I'm being dramatic about the gas prices.
Oh, side note. No, we had at the Vegas conference that I did for work a couple weeks ago, we were having
How
a dinner.
How much is
gas? No, Vegas. Oh. It's Vegas. It's still shit. But we were doing a conference with people who were sales reps from different states, and we were all having dinner together, and we were all getting on gas prices, and people in, like, Illinois and shit, some of our listeners probably, Dude, they're paying like nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we told them our prices and they like spit their drinks out. It was fucking insane.
For gentle listeners at home, if you're driving, I might have to warn you, this is about to get really graphic.
Yes.
Our gas prices are like $4.
Jesus Christ, dude.
Minimum. That's for like the shitty, like Arco low tier gas.
Nah, dude, they were pissed. They were paying like $2 now. I'm like, two fucking dollars, son.
I would like, honestly, probably cut off my left pinky for...
Oh my God, if you paid $2 for life?
Yeah.
Yeah, that wouldn't be that bad an idea.
No. My left hand's practically useless anyway.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. See?
I'm like, just pinky. Like, I am so right hand dominant that, like, I cannot do anything with my left hand.
Oh, but I do like to have my pinky out when I drink.
Okay. That is such a, like, Scrooge McDuck problem to have.
It's instinctual. I don't know why.
Scrooge McDuck.
I just have aristocratic genes, you know? No, that's not true. I have village genes. I don't know what's going on.
Dramatic.
Anyways.
Dramatic.
We gotta learn about this production, okay. Alex.
Stop talking about me. So, they had assumed the location would be fine as Steven Spielberg's The Color Purple was filmed there, but they soon realized that they were not a Spielberg production.
Yeah.
What? The town of Wadesboro was not as cooperative as they had hoped, and the crew was often haggling to secure locations and make sure things were actually shot on time and within budget. There was also the rampant racism.
Oh yeah, get prepared to learn some shit about Wadesboro in 1887, which was a good year otherwise.
Well, oh, you mean the whole North Carolina in the mid-80s?
Yeah.
Or late 80s?
Late 80s, yeah.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Racism, what?
Good old.
So,
yeah, keep going.
There were still whites only areas ranging from movie theaters to parks. The first encounter with said racism was when some crew members were trying to do laundry. They had went to a laundromat intended for the black community, which was a bit of a mess and had no AC. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's super fucked.
Well, there's more.
They were approached by a lady who urged them to leave and go to the whites-only laundromat.
I should have all caps urged because they were about to get fucked up.
Ugh.
Yeah.
They went reluctantly and found that laundromat to be of much higher quality, even having air conditioning. This film was produced in 1986.
Yeah, dude. No, they spent a good part of the documentary I was watching about just how fucking racist this North Carolina community was at the time. I don't know how it is now. It might be better now. I'm not 100% sure. But, like, they were like, dude, like, it was borderline dilapidated what the black community had to work with versus what the white people had. Like, a significant drop-off. They did not associate with each other. So, yeah. Good old 1986, you know?
1986.
That is not that long ago.
No, that was...
33 years ago.
Yeah.
33 years ago. 2019 now.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
God
Jesus Christ.
Damn. Mm-hmm.
So, as far as the actual filming went, there was the obvious production mishaps, but for the most part, the crew was way more experienced now. Well, most of the crew. The camera team was not as enthused to work on the project, which, like, fuck you guys.
Oh, yeah. There's a big there's a big fuck you moment coming up right now.
What I do enjoy about this in comparison to the first one is, like, they all lived in that shack.
They
in
did.
The first
they lived
one.
In the shack.
They lived in the shack,
yeah.
All the whole crew together.
With one guy cooking and didn't know how to fucking cook.
They had no craft services. Yep. They had nothing. Of course, in this one, they have blatant racism in North Carolina in 1986.
And a very unruly crew.
Yeah.
But that's like professional problems. That's
right.
Not like, okay, we're four dudes trying to make a movie with no script. Like, yeah, you're seeing is a big evolution. If you guys, again, if you're listening to the first episode, Evil Dead 1, and you're coming to this, there's a big step up in what Raimi was able to do in that short amount of time, because...
Hopefully there's also a jump in our production quality.
I hope so as well, too. That's true. That was during the low sound era.
Go ahead.
No, I was saying lower sound era, actually.
So, Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell were used to long shoots, improvisation, and guerrilla tactics for shooting and special effects. The camera crew was far more formalized.
Yeah, there was one interview where the guy was saying, like, the crew, Raimi was just like, okay, dude, we gotta get this and get this, and the guy's like, it's five. He's like, so we have a movie to make. He's like, I don't know, man. It's 5 o'clock. I gotta go. I have a family. And Raimu's like, we're making the Evil Dead 2. Can we make before 5? Like, it was like that kind of struggle a lot. He had a very, very formal crew. Formal.
So I have this problem at work.
Oh, no, yeah.
We have, like, the people who are, like, in it to win it, and people who are, like, I will stay till the job gets done because we believe in what we're doing. And then the people who are just, like, you're asking me to do this, and it's, mm-hmm. And we're all salary, so it's not like it fucking makes a difference anyway.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, it's 4:45. Yeah. I'll do that tomorrow. Bye.
Which I can understand. I can understand it completely. However, if you're making the Evil Dead fucking 2... with that reputation from the first one, you hustle.
Yeah.
You hustle your ass. You're working for Sam Raimi.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, Crime Wave Blue, but like...
whatever.
Yeah.
The Evil Dead didn't.
Yeah, and besides...
also, Bruce Campbell is there.
Bruce Campbell's there. Yeah. Anyways, continue on. You're going to love this. You're going to love it.
Raimi had began storyboarding, the drawings of which the crew had a hard time deciphering. Really?
Yeah, he couldn't draw.
Okay. He did this due to the difficulty of the shoots from his last two films, but he found himself being undermined by some of the camera crew, and most ideas were contested.
Yeah, that means they weren't even listening to his ass anymore. They were like, that's a stupid shot. We're not going to do that.
He's the director. Who gives a shit?
I don't know, dude. It's fucking Waynesboro fucking staff they're getting over there.
What the ever-loving shit. One night, which Bruce Campbell would go on to refer to as their Night of the Long Knives, fired a third of their crew and all of the camera staff. They were replaced over a weekend.
Yeah, Raimi fired everybody, or all the camera crew and a good amount of the other staff, too.
Yeah, that's what happens when you're not, like, focused, or not focused, but, like, not invested in your fucking job. Also, if you spend, like, 90% of your workday, like, complaining about your job and, like, trying to, like, fight your boss
being condescending to your fucking boss. Come the fuck on, dude. You're getting paid.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Do your job. Jeez.
Ugh, Jesus. Yes.
We both have problems with incompetency in the workplace.
Yeah, I feel you.
So... okay. That's
why
so,
we work well together.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So the following day, Raimi gave what had been described as a Patton-level speech that inspired the remaining crew members just as much as the new ones. From there on, the new team was ready to handle the long hours and difficult work needed to get Evil Dead 2 shot on time.
Yep. They were saying that, like, they kept the good crew members. And those guys, after seeing the other fuckers leave and having these new guys with all this energy, like, it was a drastic shift in how the thing was shot.
I mean,
like, huge.
Refreshing, I'm sure.
Yes.
So, from all accounts, Raimi beat the hell out of his actors yet again, but was particularly brutal with Bruce Campbell.
Oh, yeah.
Do they have, like, a friendly relationship now? Or still to this day?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, dude. He was just... Bruce Campbell's Raimi's good luck charm. He has to be in all his movies.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. He has to. He's his good luck charm.
I think we talked about this in the first one.
Mm-hmm. Him and Raimi are fucking, like, well, you didn't see my hands, but like this.
Yeah, you know, he's doing the finger cross thing.
They're dogs. Even if I'm telling you, you should definitely check the behind the scenes when it's on YouTube. The camera crew would, like, shoot behind the scenes, mm-hmm. would point a camera at Raimi, and he'd just start riffing and improvising because he's a fucking nerd.
Right.
But if Campbell was even a little bit nearby, he'd turn around and just jump in, and they'd have a bit going for, like, 5 minutes.
That's fine.
Then they'd run back and do the shoot again.
That's
like,
fine.
Yeah, they're bros.
Okay.
They're fucking bros.
Well, I'm glad Raimi's just, like, a weird director who likes to beat the hell out of his friends.
I think Bruce Campbell said that his, like, the thing is to
Bruce
understand...
Bruce Campbell in Spider-Man?
Yes, he's been in all the Raimi ones. He always had cameo parts.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, he was the announcer for the wrestling bit in the first one. In the second one, he was the doorman when Peter Parker was trying to go to the play with Mary Jane. And he was a waiter in the third one. Yes.
I'm doing the Macaulay Culkin Home Alone line.
She is. She totally is. You guys actually can't see this. But, like, there's, yeah.
I'm doing the front cover of Home Alone,
yeah.
A la Macaulay Culkin. Holy shit, that's so cool. I haven't seen any of the
Raimi ones?
No, I have. I just haven't seen them in a very long time.
Oh, yeah. No, I watched those obsessively when I was younger.
I mean, I did, too.
Well, the first two.
I've never seen the third one. But the first two I did watch quite a bit when I was younger. I just didn't know who Bruce Campbell was other than the gym teacher from Sky High.
of course, the one reference which you mentioned last time is totally over my fucking head.
Oh, so good. You know, it's funny. My dad, or, you know, ex-stepdad, when I was talking to him about, I was like, yeah, we need to watch The Evil Dead 2 because I'm covering it.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, oh, okay. And then he was like, oh, so funny in Sky High. And I'm like, you only know what that movie is because I made you watch it.
Oh, God. That's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. See, okay, I guess Sky High's not that bad. I don't know.
I bet you $1 billion it's on Disney Plus right now.
Oh, it has to be. I don't have it yet, but
I'm going to.
It's on the way. I know. It's on the way. I got to make a deal with Ruben.
Well, I was going to say, once I eventually get it, I can also just, you know.
I'll slap the login. Hey.
I mean, it's not like because we're going to need it for, like, horror.
No, we're not. We're definitely
it's not like
not.
Shudder.
No.
But, I mean, yeah. I also have, like, a bajillion logins. Like, I have everything,
here.
So. Yeah. I don't mind sharing the love.
Hey, we got the HBO and Stars one on my end over here, so we're good.
See? Anyway, okay.
We're back, yes.
Sorry. It's been a week. Okay, anyway. So, Campbell actually had a stunt double this time, but only used him sporadically. Like when Ash needed to tumble or fall downstairs.
That's literally it. It's like that.
Everything
or like...
else, he was just like, I got this.
Mm-hmm.
Which is hilarious. So beyond the stunt work, Raimi also wanted to up his special effects game and had 10 Deadite models to work with. He intended to use all of them.
Oh, yeah. And let's talk a little bit about the special effects and leading up to the release here. So when it came to the Deadites, Ted Raimi, Sam's younger brother, stepped up for the role of the gruesome Henrietta. And fucking the horrible goddamn Deadite.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. And Raimi intended on beating the hell out of him, too, which he totally fucking did during the shoot. Again, if you watch this documentary, it's on YouTube. It's an hour and a half long. You will see all this behind-the-scenes stuff. These actors get pummeled. They get fucking pummeled.
Love to. I think I'm going to after this.
Check it out. His costume proved difficult, though, as it would gather gallons upon fucking gallons of sweat, which Greg Nicotero, who was obviously a special effects mainstay of the era, poured into solo cups at the end of each shooting day. They also tore the costume down the middle during a stunt gone wrong, which is when Henrietta was popping out of the basement, and they had to quickly super glue it together.
Ugh.
Yeah, which didn't turn out very well because some scenes you can see a big old gash.
Right. So when I think of, like, special effects greats, Greg Nicotero is definitely on there,
mm-hmm.
which is why it reminded me of Tom Savini. He just had a birthday.
He had a birthday?
Yes, and he was like 73, and he posted like a picture of him shirtless, and he's like ripped like he's like 43.
Dude, I cannot imagine a 73-year-old Tom fucking Savini. Show me the picture.
I need to. I'm pulling it up right now. It's like, I was just like, what the fuck?
I mean, straight male here, but I gotta see this Tom Savini shirtless picture, 73. I have to know.
Hold on.
We gotta pause.
It's okay. We have the technology.
We do. We can edit.
Yeah, 73. Look at this shit.
Jesus. Whoa. No. No.
I swear.
What the fuck, dude? Oh, I gotta start working out and fix. I gotta fix my life. I gotta turn my life around, guys. That's 73? Jesus. Okay, fuck it. That's good. Okay, I got a meme there. But, like, what the shit? Okay. Fuck. Okay. No. I don't. Okay, I'm sure me and Alex are both a little blown away right now.
I think I broke Anthony.
I think you did. That I mean, I've been hilarious. Told I look young for my age, but I'm not that close to that.
Right.
What the?
Yeah, it doesn't look photoshopped. Like that is like
that looks like a legit picture, dude.
Yeah, like look like from like the head to neck. Like that is not photoshopped at all.
Look at the no. What the? Okay, he looks, guys. He looks just like he did in any of his interviews, but more ripped.
Yeah. This is like a week ago, but like, look at his birthday photo from, his birthday is the 18th. So the, November 18th photo from him and his birthday where he's 73 years old.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Okay. What the fuck is going on?
Gotta start working out, eating better, getting more sleep.
Sure.
I am gonna. Alex, I'm gonna turn my life around. I have to.
Are you sure?
I have to. After seeing that shit, I want to look like that at 73.
Okay.
I badly want to.
Okay.
Like, that's fucking inspirational right there. God damn.
I just changed Anthony's life.
You
that's
did.
Great.
You totally did. Wow.
I told you.
Tom Savini's the fucking man.
I know. I love Tom Savini.
That guy's the fucking man. Where the fuck was I? Jesus. Okay, let's get back. Let's get back. Sorry, guys. I just like, my brain broke for a second there. anyways. The cabin interior was recreated. I can't even get back to it.
No, I can't. Do you need a second?
Yeah, no, we're fine. We're good. We're going to talk about the cabin now, okay. Which was recreated for the film, though it was in a junior high school gymnasium, which is not as interesting in Tom Savini as a young man at 73. But it did give the crew more room to work with, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure Greg Nicotero's not going to look like that at 73.
No, Greg Nicotero does not look like that now.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. Anyways, the giant head that Ash battles at the end of the film was named Rotten Applehead by the crew. Very creative. They're obviously not the writers. But it was actually too big for them to take back to California once production wrapped.
California.
Fuck, no, we live here. We can't dog on the name. Sorry. Too much pride.
Technically, I was just saying it with a weird Irish accent, but sure.
No, but that was an error on my part.
Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah, no.
Your brain is still it's still a little tizzy. Tom Savini.
I still don't get it. Anyways, but really cool fact here. They abandoned this fucking prop, and it disappeared, like, immediately, and it popped up years later at a local haunted house attraction.
I love that. So, that would be me, dude, stealing this prop.
I don't think they even knew it was for the Evil Dead. They're like, oh, that's a cool monster. We could do something with this.
Because that's what people in North Carolina sound like.
That's what the racists in North Carolina sound like.
I know. As long as the person who took it wasn't a fucking racist, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, no. They only had the Evil Dead prop at the Whites Only Haunted House, Alex.
No.
That's the one with the production values.
Now I gotta go steal it.
Now you gotta go, yeah, you gotta sabotage or do something.
This next one sounds like something you would come up with.
Oh, yeah. that is definitely a me. Okay, so in terms of real-life fucking creatures, the crew had an on-set rat that the team named Señor Cajones due to its absurdly large testicles. Yeah, they would see this rat scurrying about, and I think in the documentary they all did, like, that head motion where they look up, and then just they're like, yep, big fucking testicles right there, Señor Cajones.
Which is, I mean, like, male rats... Like, if they're not fixed, like,
oh, yeah.
Huge. It's obnoxious. Like, I'm like, okay.
Well, they gotta spread those seeds, man. Rats pump them out. They pump out them babies.
I know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is a funny story. It does not have to stay in here. But when I was younger, I got two rats. I thought they were both girls. They were not.
Oh, no. Oh, no. What happened?
Well, one of them, their balls dropped. And then very, very shortly, like, literally too short for us to do anything about it, rat babies.
You had a lot of rats to deal with.
Technically, they escaped through the air vent.
Oh, you guys aren't seeing quotes, but they're... Yeah, they escaped, huh?
But, years later, I asked my mom about this, because I still believed it.
Yeah.
Like, in my head, because mm-hmm. I believe, because you believe your parents.
Yeah, the rats can... go places, well, in small crevices.
This was, like, in the apartment, like, the air vents were on the floor.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So she was like, yeah, they escaped through the air vents. And I was like, oh, no. And then, like, 2 hours later, I was over it. Mm-hmm. But apparently, she gave them to my grandpa, and my grandpa, like, either killed them or released them out back. It depends on how she's feeling that day.
Jesus. Well, I mean, domesticated rats, they're probably dead anyways. So...
I don't know the truth of the story because no one will actually tell me.
You're fine. You're an adult.
It has been, like, I don't know, 18 years?
Jesus.
Maybe.
Okay, well.
I think my heart can take it.
They could be okay. They're all dead right now anyways. You know, whatever. Yeah.
I think
they're
I can
rats.
Take it.
They're rats. Anyways, you know.
So, Señor Cajones.
Yeah, Señor Cajones.
That was fucking
probably
hilarious.
Had a lot of babies.
I did read... So, yeah, as I read that, I was like, this is something Anthony would fucking
Anyways.
Come up with the nickname Señor Cajones.
Señor Cajones. Lots of the effects, though. even the ball effect on the... Yeah. Lots of effects went unused, however, as many scenes were actually cut from the final film. Like, this is actually a big fan movement to try to find these shits. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, these include Ash eating a squirrel after chasing Annie, and Linda's Ugh, Linda's my mom's name. Oh. Linda's severed head throwing up black bile on Ash.
You should be able to say Linda then.
Yeah, I just call her mom.
Mother. Right, but like I can read the word Julie okay, and that's my mom's name.
Your mom's name's Julie? Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that name. My grandma's name's also Linda, so fucking A. Yeah, I should be better at this.
Sorry, Mama.
I didn't mean it. So there actually have been, again, several attempts over the years to find all these missing scenes, which I can't include all of them because there's actually quite a bit. But most of the efforts have only found extended sequences at best, and that's mostly of existing scenes. So it's like, eh. They're gone. They're fucking gone, fans. I'm sorry, man.
No!
Just not gonna have them. No. The producers of The Evil Dead did not even bother to try to get an R rating after wrapping up and editing the film. They didn't fucking try. Yeah. The most they did was actually change some of the blood colors, but the MPAA still gave them their first attempt, actually, a complete X rating.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. There was no
getting around. Above NC-17?
Yeah. That's, well, I mean, NC-17, I think, is the augmentation of it. There is no X anymore. But the X rating was harsher than the current X, NC-17. So,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was like, you can't do shit with an X rating. Anyways, knowing they couldn't cut the film down to get an R, they released The Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn, without a rating. So they just recut it enough to where it's like, look, a different movie, but you're not going to rate it. And they just did it their own.
Can you do that?
Well, this is how they did it. So they actually managed to do it by building a shell company called Rosebud, which kept heat off producer Dino De Laurentiis for making an X-rated movie and allowed them to distribute the film freely.
Oh, sneaky.
Yep, shell company, which I think was address-based in like a closet in a warehouse. Like,
wonderful.
Yeah, yeah, there was no office there. But yeah, So Evil Dead was ready to fucking roll.
Also, Rosebud is just such a funny, like, that's, because it's used as, like, a cheat code.
Cheat code, what?
Rosebud.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. It's used as a cheat code in The Sims.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I only know it from Citizen Kane. Huh.
It's all tied together. Yeah.
Okay.
It's used as a cheat code, so I just thought that was funny.
That's pretty cool. All right. I like both of our interests just aligned right there.
It gives you $50,000.
What? Oh, money. That's right. Citizen Kane. Ah, okay, cool. Yeah, that makes sense. You never seen Citizen Kane? Oh, no, she's nodding. I'm a film nerd, guys. Yeah.
Well, okay, here's the thing. So, Citizen Kane is one of those movies where, like, technically, most of my film nerd friends and technically, like, my film studies friends who have seen, or, like, I went to, like, school with and everything, were just, like, I've had to have seen this movie so many times, or I've been forced to watch this movie so many times, I cannot imagine myself having to watch it again. So I was just like, oh god, I never want to watch it then. So, and that's why.
It's like a Paul Thomas Anderson movie, like a There Will Be Blood style film, but in the 40s. But I'm one of those people that I can rewatch it. I kind of really like it. I do.
I'll watch it once, I guess. Like, I mean, I'm starting.
I don't think you'd like it.
I am starting to try to watch older movies. It doesn't mean I'll like it.
It's one of the more contemporary type
films.
Like, it actually has a very contemporary pace to it, and, like, the shooting style is, like, modern. So you might be okay with it.
This is not. I will give it a shot, but this is not a review on Citizen Kane.
No,
because this is not a classic film podcast.
No, it is definitely not a horror movie.
So, yeah. So let's bring it back. Let's cult classic round two.
Yeah, let's see how that got created. Yes.
So Sam Raimi's return to horror was well celebrated as it received positive reviews from critics. Yay! Our boy, Roger Ebert, gave the film 3 out of 4 stars and was surprised by how smart of a satire the film was. He stated, "Level 1 viewers will say it's in bad taste. Level 2 folks like myself will perceive that it's about bad taste."
Ooh. He's so succinct.
He's so snarky.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, listen, peasants.
Right. Like, he's
you're not
just
smart enough for this shit.
Yeah, he's just like, lower tier viewers will think it's a bad movie. What? Stop it. Anyway.
He's very good at being an asshole, though. Like,
of course.
He is.
Of course.
He totally is.
That's kind of like his, you know, that's his shtick.
That's why we have him.
Variety states, a flashy, good-natured display of special effects and scare tactics so extreme they can only be taken for laughs.
Damn.
Which I can, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
One of the few bad reviews came from the Chicago Reader, where Pat Graham says, on the basis of this strained effort, I'd say he's overshot the mark. Which, okay, sure.
Yeah, that was...
Thanks, Pat.
All right, Mr. Graham.
I like it. Okay, the film premiered on the glorious day of March 13th, 1987, at a theater that is now a Whole Foods in Westwood.
Yeah, wasn't a very glamorous glamorous premiere, no.
Some of the crew was scared that the film was being ridiculed due to the absurd amount of laughter at the premiere, but the glowing reviews made them realize that critics understood what the film was going for ultimately.
Yeah, I think, and what I remember, one of the special effects people was like nervous as fuck, and he was like talking, he like nudged the person next to him and was like, dude, why is everybody laughing? He's like, because it's fucking awesome.
And
he's
it's a
like,
great movie.
Yeah, and then just like relief over his face, obviously, after that. So, yeah.
That's good.
Well received.
It had a low opening weekend and was actually picking up steam throughout its run, but it did ultimately reach a total gross of $5,923,044 domestically after just over a month in theaters. Just like the first film, Evil Dead 2 was a major hit on home video and was considered a worthy sequel to the first.
Yeah, it made almost $6 million. Did a big hit on fucking VHS. Like,
I mean, and then I'm sure, you know, quickly becoming a cult classic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, falling in very quickly with the ranks of the first one.
Well, yeah, because the first one was so well regarded. They're like, how is he going to do it? And this one was perceived as better.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't happen a lot, obviously.
That's usually the opposite.
With the amount of, you know, we did sequel September, we know.
So this is actually Bruce Campbell's favorite film in the series, though it was only a minor hit. It ultimately did become a cult classic, like we just said. Dino De Laurentiis was game for a third installment, but Raimi had a different idea in mind. He had always wanted to do a superhero film and found himself with the opportunity to make one in the form of 1990s Darkman.
I used to love that movie when I was a kid.
I have no idea what this is.
It's a really dark superhero movie. Liam Neeson is Darkman.
You know what? I never would have guessed that. By the time.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Sorry. I was all playing it straight. Like, what? Yeah. No, it's really dark. Oh, right. Darkman. God damn.
This would turn out to be the opposite experience of Crime Wave and led to a deal where Raimi was able to make his true vision of an Evil Dead sequel, Ash in Medieval Europe. But we'll talk more about that when we cover Army of Darkness, probably next November. Hopefully sooner if I can manage it, because Army of Darkness is my favorite.
It's fucking awesome. It is. It absolutely
is. God, it's so fucking good.
Yeah. But I don't know.
No, which isn't to say this is bad.
No, it's good too.
Army of Darkness has a particular just like, it's just nonsensical fun.
Well, I think it's the best Ash.
Yeah.
Well, okay, it's the
so
best Ash,
campy.
But you gotta watch the show, Ash versus the Evil Dead, to really see like the best Ash.
Are you sure?
Oh yeah.
Can I watch it now?
You've seen all three movies. You're totally fine. You can just watch it on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
They have the whole series on there.
I know, but, like, I wasn't sure if I needed to see, like, I don't know.
No, you're set.
Are there only three Evil Dead movies?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you're set. You're perfect now. You can start it.
For some reason, I thought the Evil Dead franchise, there was, like, more. Like, I thought it was one of those ones where there was, like, Evil Dead 7 or, like, Evil Dead 4.5 or something.
Well, these first three movies, a remake, and, three seasons of the Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Right, which I know is really good. Is it still ongoing?
Or no, it wrapped up.
Oh, okay.
So you actually have a full arc to work with now.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I know what I'm doing later.
Dude, and that first episode of Ash vs. Evil Dead is essentially Evil Dead 4. Like, it's fucking good. It's cat.
Did you see that?
Oh, yeah.
She just...
Oh, yeah. She's pissed now.
But yeah, so that is the Evil Dead 2.
Dang, we did it. We fucking made it. Nice.
So good. So, let's kick off with some discussion. We can finally talk about this fucking movie.
We can finally talk about the movie, yes.
We kind of been holding it in this entire time.
Yeah. Anyways, what you think? Evil Dead 2.
My thoughts on this movie. Well, unfortunately, I had to watch it in parts, so I didn't get to watch it all in one go.
Mm-hmm. I watched it in parts this time, too, actually.
Yeah. I so I'm looking forward to watching it again all in one go. But it's very fun. Like, I really enjoy... I really enjoy Raimi's shooting style.
I know. He got so much better in this one.
Yeah. Also, I just, like, Ash's character is just so fucking funny to me. He's so dopey and just dumb, but also just, like, miraculously survives everything.
His character takes a beating, too.
Right.
Like, and he then, just can.
Yeah. And I am, and then in Army of Darkness, like, he's just, like, this dumb, suave, like...
Oh, my gosh, dude. You would love that fucking show, I'm telling you. Watch it after we're done.
I will. I'm very excited. Like, yes. It's super exciting. But, he's just... The difference between, like, 1 to 2 to 3, like, you see actual character development.
Yes, you totally do.
Which I... appreciate greatly, because, like, you normally, like, don't see that. I would say, like, you know, you see something kind of akin to that and like something like Scream, where, like, Sydney Prescott, kind of like her evolution. But
it's just not common in horror, though.
No, it's not, really, especially in a franchise, because, like, everyone wants to stick to what they think will make money, so they don't want to really explore their characters.
No, they want blood and blah blah blah. And Raimi gets to do both. He did both.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, you, I wouldn't say you don't see it as much in horror, but you do see, you don't see it much in camp.
Oh, definitely.
Or, like, B, quote-unquote, horror. Or low budget, or whatever you want to call
Growth isn't the priority in those movies. No. There's just not.
So, this is, like, the perfect marriage of, like, campy, yet quality.
Yes, absolutely. No, and I agree with that.
I love that. Because also, like, you know, you have some pretty... I mean, you have Sam fucking Raimi. You also have Greg Nicotero. Like, you have, like, great people. Like, he has great people working with him to make this, like, awesome. So...
Yeah.
Overall, I really enjoyed it. Like, I definitely, I still think Army of Darkness reigns supreme as my favorite, but I did enjoy it. It was great.
Yeah, I would actually say I like Army of Darkness better than this one, but I do like this one more than the first. And it's just something about, like, I think you hit the nail on the head with Ash's change. Because it's not immediate.
No.
But I think when the whole cabin starts laughing at him, like, that scene when, and he's just laughing with them, and he just fucking goes crazy.
For just a second?
For just a second. From there on, Ash is, like, a different character.
I think when he has to cut off his own hand.
Yeah, that too.
I think that's a little bit, like, when your hand gets possessed and tries to kill you, I think. Which also, funny as shit acting, by the way, when you're just, like, trying to, like, pretend like your hand is, like, separate from the rest of your body.
Oh, I didn't put it in the script, but there was a very specific influence. Oh, one of the special effects people did... a short film where the hamburger, the hamburger helper hand murdered the fuck out of a family.
I love that.
That's awesome, right?
That's amazing.
Raimi saw it and was like, I'm going to hire you and we're doing that fucking bit. Like, that's how that got put together in the film.
And I love how that decision, like, set the precedent for giving, like, creating, basically horror iconography.
Oh my gosh.
Because without that... he wouldn't have had to cut off his own hand, and then we wouldn't have, like, the fucking chainsaw.
Yeah, the augmented chainsaw. Like,
good.
Oh, dude. But, no, I gotta say, though, the one moment in this film where I think, like, we officially got new Ash. I mean, the laugh is, I think, how the growth starts.
Yeah, it's when it's born.
But, like, when the camera just stops, it's the most Raimi moment. It comes up to him, and Ash just goes, groovy. Like, that shit, I was like... oh, fuck yes.
Yeah.
Fuck yes. We're going from here on.
So, when he does that, because he also does that in, he does it all the time in fucking Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
Every time I'm just like, fuck yes!
Dude, but that was the first one, and it was the most epic, like, just that slow zoom, and just, like, Ash turning, it was like, dude, fuck yes. That's the Ash Williams that I love.
I think... I think my one sentence consensus of this movie is just like, fuck yes, exclamation point.
Yes, yeah.
Like, I cannot express the amount of, like, just unbridled joy Evil Dead as a franchise brings me.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I can't exactly put my finger on it. It's just fun. It has, like, a certain amount of, like, mind-numbing dumbness to it that, like, you don't have to think really hard about it. But it's
aware.
But it's aware of what it's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just good. And I never thought I would say that about a horror film this campy. Or
yeah, because camp's not your thing.
No, camp. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like camp, but like, I don't like it with my horror films normally. Yeah. And for example, like, just like with Killer Clowns, how mm-hmm. you like, I had to be like forced at gunpoint to watch Killer Clowns. But then once I did, I was like, this is so good.
Yeah.
Evil Dead, thankfully, I didn't have to be forced at gunpoint because I was just like, okay, this is fine. And then mm-hmm. I watched it and I was like, this is amazing. But I tricked myself into watching Evil Dead. See? But right? Oh my God. God damn. So
I know.
Good.
No, but like, honestly, like, yeah, this, I just really like it. I just really like this film.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's well shot. It looks better than the first one. Army of Darkness looks better than both of these. Ash vs. the Evil Dead looks fucking amazing. It just keeps getting better as a series. And this is one of those pivotal ones where, like, a lot of what defines the series going forward with, like, Necronomicon,
yeah.
the behavior of the Deadites, like, all that shit. It's just, it has its inception in this. And, of course, you get motherfucking Chainsaw Hand.
You get that. And I remember, I think I mentioned this in the first episode, but I was just like, I was waiting for Chainsaw Hand the whole
mm-hmm.
time. I was
yeah.
waiting for Chainsaw
you
Hand.
You did, that's right.
And you were just like, doesn't happen till the second one. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no!
Yeah, but you got it, and it was badass.
I did. Yeah. I finally got my chainsaw hand, and I was just like, oh my God, we're getting the chainsaw hand! The other part was when he had to, like, chainsaw his girlfriend's head. I was just like,
oh yeah.
I was like, wow, we're going there, huh?
Well, I mean, okay, so then I'm going to put these two questions together, but
yeah.
Let's see, how do you think this compares directly to the first film, more particularly in regards to the violence and the kind of switch from something that's a little more 50-50 horror comedy, maybe a little more horror, to this one, which is definitely a campy horror comedy. Like, because they're tonally a little different.
Tonally, yes. I mm-hmm. think, again, I wish I had the time, and it sucks because I don't have an answer because we can't pause it and, like, watch mm-hmm. it again real quick, but I really wish I could watch it again and give you a better answer than this, because I spent literally the first, like, third of the movie
mm-hmm.
trying to figure out why they just ignored the first movie. Like, it really tripped me up.
It did throw you off that
like,
much.
Yeah, because I didn't know. Like, I had mm-hmm. no idea, like, that's why that happened, or I had no idea about the rights issue. And, of course, like, with the amount of time we've been doing this podcast, I really should have just chalked it up to, it's a rights issue, I should
yeah.
just let it go.
Yes.
But I couldn't. I could not let it go. So, I really, like, it took me out of the movie so bad. So, it's really because I was just like, we're just ignoring the first movie. We're just, mm-hmm. like, fucking ignoring it, okay. And that just made it hard to kind of compare, because I was just like, I was stuck on it. I couldn't let it go. But in terms of comparisons, I would say the first one has a lot more, I would say, quote unquote, traditional
horror, absolutely,
elements,
absolutely.
To it. It has like the creepy doll face,
mm-hmm.
it has like the weird eerie voices. Also, it, in terms of tradition, it has a very unnecessary rape scene.
Oh, yeah, with the tree.
We have the tree rape scene.
With the tree, that's right.
And that was weird.
Yeah, and the comedy elements aren't, like, super played up. It's mostly just within the violence.
There's no... Yeah, I would say the gore is, like, kind of dressed up for comedy in the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But in this one, in the second one, there's so much more comedic elements to it.
Oh,
everything's
yeah.
a little bit more campy. It's a little bit more loosey-goosey.
There's a hand fight.
There's a literal possessed hand.
Yeah.
Like, I mean... You can't see me, but I'm literally
She's doing the weird hand motions.
Yes.
wait till we cover Idle Hands one day. The hand motions are going to be off the fucking
chains. Oh, yeah, it's going to be great. But yeah, there's that. There's just, I mean, the stories are a little bit different. Like, the first one, there's that interpersonal drama with just, like, the friend group.
That's true, huh?
Yeah, you can...
This one doesn't really have that.
No, not really.
They're fodder.
Yeah, definitely. You can tell, like, they're kind of gun fodder.
Mm-hmm.
In the first one, also, you have... fuck, I had a thought. You took my thought.
Oh, my bad.
No, but in the first one, they have, you know, their relationships and all of that, and then... Their deaths are a little bit more impactful.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's yeah, definitely more traditional. And then, you know, it progresses in, like, that evolution. So you see not only do the movies, or not only does Ash have, like, that character development, but the movies kind of do.
They do, yeah.
In a way that, like, some might view it as a de-evolution, but I think it definitely fits with the theme.
Yeah, absolutely. Because,
like, as a cohesive unit, they still all go with each other. Like,
they
do. Like, the first one goes with the second one, goes with the third one.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't say the first one goes with the third one.
No. You need an Evil Dead 2 in between them.
Yeah, it's absolutely a good middle ground. Like, you can't go from watching the first movie to watching the third one.
I mean, do you think, though, seeing the third one helped you better with the watching of Evil Dead 2, knowing what the franchise would become?
Yes.
Okay, see? I figured as much. I felt like you would have liked this one a lot more knowing that you loved Army of Darkness.
Yes. Since I was, like, screaming at how much I loved Army of Darkness for, like, weeks after Camp Freedom.
Yes.
It definitely made me much more enthused about watching watching 2. Two still had campy elements. So I can say you can probably watch Army of Darkness, Dead by Dawn, or whatever it's called.
Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn, yeah.
Dead by Dawn, okay. I was like, it's not Dead by Daylight.
Yeah.
That's a video game.
that's a total video game. Yeah.
Dead by Dawn and, you know, the first one, you can watch them in reverse order, but I don't think you could do 1, 3, and 2.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
That would be a little...
It basically makes 2 a prequel.
Right. Well, also 2...
And, like, 3 just, a time skip.
Right, but just, like, stylistically, like, they're very different movies, but they still cohesively have... Like, they're still a unit, which I think is very interesting, and I think it's very tricky to do. So I think
it's super fucking tricky. Absolutely.
So I think Raimi did an amazing job with somehow making all of it work. And I think also Bruce Campbell can take responsibility for that as well.
Oh, for
because,
being
like,
Ash, yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, just his character is just, like, so consistent, and the changes in his character and the development is so subtle that it's noticeable enough that it's character development, but it's not so sudden that it doesn't feel like he's a totally different character in each movie.
Yeah, he is Ash, like, to his goddamn core. And, like, the thing is, he's also producer on these films.
Yeah.
So, like, he has a hand in exactly how Ash grows, along with his writers, along with the director. Yeah. Like, Bruce Campbell is Evil Dead.
I do think he also made an Evil Dead joke on Sky High.
Oh, did he?
I do think
he
so.
He had to have. He had to have.
If I recall correctly, and I remember my dad just being like...
That's
and
awesome.
And me just
That's
being
awesome.
Like, I don't get it. Yeah. And he's just like...
Like, that's just a sentence, Dad.
Those are just words.
Yeah. It's like, you'll understand later. You'll understand.
You'll
later.
Understand
yeah, you'll get
one
it.
Day.
You'll get it.
And now I'm just like, I love the Evil Dead. But
I think
so
what helps with the evolution point that you made right here is Army of Darkness is what Raimi had been wanting to do for some time. So that was his initial Evil Dead 2 plan. So that's always been in the back burner, something that he's built up.
Mm-hmm.
Evil Dead 2 was made in that creative pressure, but he was still in his prime, hungry for a hit after the surprise success of the first one. All these elements worked in conjunction to create this kind of film. And I think, like, it's just the perfect storm between every fucking movie, which is why they're all so good. Because they're a good evolution of his style, and they're in situations where he had to deliver, and he fucking delivered every time.
I got immensely... Yeah, they all got immensely lucky.
They did.
I did remember the thought that, like, I lost, finally. In the first one of the things that you can also kind of tell is there the tension between the characters also probably has a lot to do with the fact that they were all crammed in a fucking cabin for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks.
As actors and crew members,
as actors and crew members. And I think that bleeds into the movie.
That definitely does.
And I think that gives it a little bit more of a dramatic tension that you don't get in the second one.
No, you definitely don't.
And that was just something I wanted to point out.
No, that's a really good point. Because, yeah, this one, there's obviously the tension. There was tension with the crew and stuff.
Right.
But that's more like Raimi's like, listen, I know what I'm doing. I'm going to do it. And if you're not going to do it, you're gone. And we're going to fucking do it.
Right. Like, so, I mean, like, the people that he had issues with, like, didn't make it to the end of the movie anyway. Mm-mm. So that wasn't even an issue.
No. And honestly, it's just, you can see the beginnings of Raimi's polish in here. He's becoming more confident as a filmmaker, and this is a more confident movie than the first one.
Definitely.
For sure. And then 3, obviously, is just like balls to the fucking wall.
It's so fun.
It's
nonsensical joy.
It's the culmination of everything you want to do with Evil Dead. And then Ash vs. Evil Dead is the perfect, like, decades later revitalization of a franchise. If you're going to do it,
we'll
you're going to do it like
it.
That.
Yeah, and then we'll cover that. Eventually.
So, next question. This film gives Ash his trademark look, which we discussed earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, bloody blue shirt and chainsaw augmentation on his hand arm. What about this look do you think makes it so iconic and stand the test of time? Like, what is it?
Chainsaw hand,
obviously.
Like, literally, this man does not have a hand. He has a fucking chainsaw. And I think also, to an extent, like, If me who knew very, very little about the Evil Dead, like, lore and, like, the franchise, I knew that they were the Deadites were, like, demons or zombie type things, basically. So I was just like, oh, how fucking cool would that be in the zombie apocalypse to have a fucking, like, chainsaw arm? Like, that would be so handy, right? Like, no pun intended.
Oh, that was good.
Literally no pun intended.
It was like a revelation to me right now. Oh, handy. Oh, that was a pun.
No, as I said it, I was like,
yeah, hold on a second. I'm not that late.
But I think that's kind of what attributes to that kind of iconography for him as a character. I think also just like his mannerisms and his character is also kind of what attributed to what helped him stand the test of time.
Yeah, that's true.
I think also is part of it, but definitely I think the chainsaw, I mean, I don't know what exactly made it so iconic for people, but I think just people think that's fucking cool. Right
I think honestly, like, the design itself is just kind of perfect,
right?
Like, he's got fucking blue shirt, fucking tattered, he's beat, he's got a chain, he's looked like he's seen some shit, and he's used his chainsaw to do it,
right?
Like, and he's Bruce fucking Campbell, he's got that fucking jaw, he's tall, he's just like, he's the guy that you're gonna want to follow behind if those deadites are up. But like,
right.
From just the way that he stands with that beaten, tattered look and having the chainsaw, like,
I think
that's
the whole
just,
look.
With everything.
With the shot of shotgun on his back.
With the shotgun on his back, his fucking boomstick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, like, iconic. That's also part of, like, the iconic,
absolutely,
like, look. And then with the chainsaw, like, it all kind of comes together in, like, this just iconic, like, you know, I mean, you would, if someone dressed up as him at a con, you would recognize who
absolutely
it was
from across the fucking groups, droves of hordes of motherfuckers,
right?
Yes,
you would,
yeah,
know
absolutely
who it was, right? So I think that's super rad.
Yeah, I think aesthetically it just is kind of the perfect combination of shit. Yeah, it is, it's simple, exactly.
And I think that's also what makes it easy, is that it's very, very simple to stick in your brain. A man with a chainsaw arm and a blue shirt. Like, that is, like, your basic cut and dry,
yes,
Ash.
God, dude, oh, man. Again, please let me know what you think of Ash vs. Evil Dead. I will tell you one more thing, too. One more thing. One of the things that I think the series films didn't do as well was with characters that weren't Ash.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they became fodder.
I know that there were a lot more side characters that, like, in Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Dude, they're so good.
Yeah.
They're, like, up there with Ash.
Good.
Like, not in terms of the badassery, but, like, in terms of standing on their own and being able to be like, oh, of course that character would punk around Ash right now. Like, they're just so amazingly well written. It's another example of Raimi.
Okay, so
growing.
Raimi's involved.
Oh yeah, he directed the first.
Okay.
The first pilot episode, which is why I'm saying watch it,
okay,
because that pilot is Evil Dead 4. I'm telling you.
Okay.
Ooh.
So he just did the pilot.
No, he's directed here and there.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, he produced.
So there's multiple,
produced it,
but he produced the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
I'll watch it when you leave. How about
that?
Yeah.
Hell yes. Hey, get the fuck out of here.
I know. I just kicked you out. Like, all right, let's wrap it up. All right, thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah, hey, we gotta watch a Weird show.
Why do you think this ranks as one of the, if not the most popular entry in the series? I'm curious on your take, because I everyone knows my take on this.
Yeah, I think honestly, like, it's kind of the perfect middle ground between what the first Evil Dead was in terms of horror, and
yeah,
then, like, comedy stuff. It's
pure absurdity.
Pure absurdity. It is the exact mix of, I think, what people are looking for in Evil Dead, because they still want to be scared. And yeah. again, later on in the series, there's stuff that will definitely freak you out. But they also still want to have that absurd, comical, over-the-top B-movie kind of schlock to it.
Yeah.
That this movie does both pretty well. Although yeah. more of the schlocky stuff, but I think, like, it does it well.
I think, yeah, I do agree. I do think the second one is a lot more schlocky, but not so schlocky that, like, it's the third one. Because now that I'm thinking about it, the third one has, like, no real... I mean, it has, like, some scary elements just purely from, like, the Deadite perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's, at its core, like, basically a fantasy action movie.
Yes.
Sci-fi movie with... Zombie demons.
Yeah, not all horror,
like,
elements.
No, there's not all... I mean, I don't want to say there's no horror elements, but, like, other than the Deadites, it's basically a sci-fi fantasy action movie.
Yes, absolutely.
Like...
Yes. Which people still love, obviously. Right. But yeah.
Like, that's fine and all. And that's kind of funny, but I just... Because I was just thinking about it right now, because that really did make me think about it. Because I'm like, the third one isn't really a horror film.
No. And
it doesn't have any scary real bits in it.
No, and before people had the show, if they wanted that level of camp and some scariness, they had to go to the Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
So for decades, this was probably the dominant Evil Dead for those Raimi horror fans.
What was the different or year difference between
this one and the first one?
Or this and Army of Darkness?
Army of Darkness, I believe, was 92. Or 93.
Okay. So they had to wait a couple of years.
They had to wait. Same thing with Evil Dead 1. Like, they're all within those kind of increments. And gotcha. Then Ash vs. Evil Dead is like 2016.
Right.
So yeah, much bigger.
Quite a few years.
Yeah, much bigger difference. So yeah, I think that's why this one kind of, like, has that reputation. Because for the longest time, this was the one if you kind of wanted everything.
Gotcha.
Which the first one didn't quite have as much of the camp. At least to the level of polish needed.
Mm-hmm.
And the Army of Darkness was fucking... stands on its own. That's fucking Army of Darkness. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. How about you in your estimation?
I mean, I agree with you.
All right, cool.
I have no other... You're right. That's pretty much... Yeah, I agree. I think that... it is a really good middle ground if people want that little bit of humor to go with their... to go with their horror, and especially at the time, because you're thinking late 80s, early 90s, people are looking for something, because the horror genre was not doing so hot at the time.
Yeah, that's true. They were coming down from the 80s slasher era.
Exactly. So this was probably the little bit of comedy that everyone probably needed.
And it was different enough from the slashers to really stand out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. We figured it out.
We solved the mystery.
We did it.
So considering the first film was labeled a video nasty, and we talked about that before, and this one doesn't have a comparable controversy, what does it tell you about how horror had evolved throughout the 80s? Or is the change a little bit more broader in scope?
Tough to say. I kind of want to say the change is broader in scope. Like... people kind of got desensitized.
I guess. I mean, yeah. It's gorier than the first one, which is funny.
Like, horror in general and, like, what was going on in the world at the time and shit, people were desensitized to, like, violence. It became more of, like, a... I don't know. There wasn't as many picket lines, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess. But I think for the... I think also... the reason that the first one ended up getting labeled as a video nasty in the first place is because people were, like, shocked by it. Like, they were jarred by it.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of what we were just talking about, how, like, the second one had those little twinges of humor.
Mm-hmm.
The gore could also be construed as, like, a comedic device, in my opinion.
Yes, absolutely.
So I think that, coupled with the fact that it was the second movie in a franchise, so people kind of had known to expect it to be gruesome in the first place.
It wasn't as big a surprise, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay, so that makes sense.
I think that's a little bit more, if we want to go a little bit more micro with it instead of macro.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
No, anyway. I think that's actually pretty accurate. Like, honestly, I can say, you know, whatever broader, but I mean, if I think about it, people picketed Child's Play, and that was only a couple years later.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, that's right. I should never underestimate moral panic. I forget people are fucking insane.
Yeah, so who knows? But, I mean, that's just kind of, I mean, my opinion.
Yeah, and then I mean, think people are, like, just getting tired of slashers and, like, horror at this point in time. Because, like, just as we talked about sentences ago, like, leading out of this horror and going into the 90s, That's probably why Army of Darkness is a more medieval fantasy adventure film. Because if it was straight horror, it wouldn't have done as good. It just, not in that era. No. Not pre-Scream. Because he had that, like, fucking, I would say from Child's Play to Scream. With the exception of Silence of the Lambs. In between where horror was confused.
Right. Like, well, Silence of the Lambs, for a lot of people, isn't even a horror film.
Yeah, it's more of an Academy, like, thriller-style film.
It's more of a psychological thriller. All of the pretentious dickwads who refuse to acknowledge psychological...
I know. But, like, again, it's one of those things where straight horror was kind of shunned, I would say.
Yeah, I agree.
Borderline shunned, you know?
Yeah.
And, this was... in a time right before that really started falling off. Like, right before. So, yeah, people were just, again, not about it enough. But, yeah, other than that, I think... Kill the Film? I have a hard time picking this one out. I have no idea.
No, they're all fun.
Yeah, they're all pretty good.
I don't have... None particular really stand out to me, to be perfectly honest. Like, none of them were just like, fuck yes!
Yeah. I mean, even the fodder guys.
But here's the thing. Is I wasn't emotionally attached to any of the introduced characters because I'm like, okay, you're all clearly going to die.
I kind of actually really...
Annie? The girl who was doing the incantation?
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up. Yeah, because there's like that boss fight at the end.
Yeah. Like the actual
Henrietta,
boss fight.
Henrietta fucking popping out. Yeah. I think, that's actually... That was a really solid way to end the film.
I agree. And then, you know, it ending, I like how also, I mean, it ends where Army of Darkness begins.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is also kind of funny.
Dude, I want Ash in the Old West so bad.
Oh, that would be great.
Dude, Deadites in the West.
But yeah, so I don't really have a particular kill of the film.
Yeah, me neither.
Okay.
I would just give it to Annie, to be honest with you.
Well, out of five Necronomicons...
Out of five Necronomicons, this was Evil Dead 2 is a 4.5.
Necronomicons. I will give it a 3.75.
3.75, I'll take it. You know what? I'm going to put it down to a 4. Because if I'm looking at the context of the whole series, I would say it's a 4 because I'm going to save the higher ratings for some of the later installments, for sure.
Ash vs. the Evil Dead.
Ash vs. the Evil Dead and Army of Darkness, for sure.
I'll give it a 3.75.
Okay.
Which is so funny because I think it is a general consensus. This might be my least favorite of the franchise.
Really? I like it a little more than the first. Yeah.
I think I like the first I think they might be tied for different reasons.
For different reasons. I can see that. Totally. Because they are...
Before I give like a definitive Horrible People's Podcast rating, I do think I need to watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
And I do need to like... I think I just need to have like a Evil Dead marathon. Because I would love to watch all three in one sitting. Because they're not very long.
They're very short movies.
They're all very quick movies, which I do also appreciate for my attention.
Yeah. And by the way, if you guys haven't seen the first Evil Dead, you can totally just watch this one.
I think
you'll be okay. They recap the first one in Cliff Notes.
They recap it in like the first 5 minutes to the point that you think that you missed something.
Yeah.
For the first 30 minutes.
It's okay. It's okay. It's done. You're okay, Alex.
I'm not.
The movie can't hurt you anymore.
Am I safe now? Am I okay now?
But what happened?
Anyway.
Yeah.
So I think anything else you would like to say before we wrap up?
Next week is the first week of December.
Which
is a tradition that we're starting on this podcast. We started it last year. And it's going to be fun.
It's one of our least popular episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm forcing this tradition because fuck you guys.
Exactly. And I really want to watch this movie too. And it plays in the tradition. So fuck it. We're doing it.
Next week. Y'all want to watch whatever, dude. First week of December. It is time. Should I just say the name of it?
Fuck it. Let's go. Spoilers.
Not the name of the movie, but the name of
the event?
Yes.
The name of the monumental event. What is it, Alex?
Cronenberg Christmas.
Cronenberg fucking Christmas. is next week,
guys. It is next week. I'm so excited. I have been waiting for this literally since September. I have been looking forward to this because fuck you guys. You did the fly dirty last year.
Oh, it got so much likes on Instagram compared to all the other posts at the time,
too. I fucking love our The Fly episode. I fucking loved it. I loved the movie. I loved everything about it.
Fucking Jeff Goldblum is the shit.
Jeff Goldblum, Gina Davis. All of them.
That was a very good movie, man.
It's such a good such movie, a good and movie. Y'all slept on it.
It's okay, dude. They get a second chance. They get a second chance with our Cronenberg Christmas pick for next week, which we're not going to tell you.
Which I'm not going to tell you. Your little hint was at the beginning. Just know that it was a complete commercial flop, and we will talk about it next week.
If we're talking about Cronenberg, there's a lot of flops. So, it's not help at all.
I know. No, it's barely a hint. You have no... But we will talk about it then. But as a final farewell to Evil Dead 2, hopefully we will cover Army of Darkness soon, but not too soon, because we have limited Evil Dead material to cover.
Yeah, that's true. And then I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving.
Oh, yes. I hope everyone did have a wonderful, happy, restful Thanksgiving.
I think it's the day after we release this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I hope you have a good Thanksgiving tomorrow and the gore from the Evil Dead did not ruin your meal.
So I hope everyone has a wonderful, happy Thanksgiving if you're in America tomorrow.
But if you're celebrating abroad, fuck you.
Well, no, for example, Canadian Thanksgiving was a month and a half ago.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm just talking about American Thanksgiving.
Okay, yeah. Well, also, it's not like I particularly celebrate Thanksgiving, but, I do enjoy the time off and I do enjoy the food. My mom is just like, what if I did Chinese food this year?
Really? Oh, dude, we go Thanksgiving hard.
We go hard. Yeah, it depends on the year. Sometimes it's mad traditional. Sometimes my mom's just like, mm-mm. It just depends.
My mom was so sad when I was in college because I could not come home for Thanksgiving because we didn't have much money to do it.
Oh, and also the break is too short to really rationalize.
Yeah, to rationalize it exactly when you can't afford plane tickets. But it's just... It was one of those times Thanksgiving's so important that she was for 2 years. To this day, it's just when you were gone for college, I know.
Well, aside from our sad stories, we hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving tomorrow, and I hope that there are no killer turkeys and there's minimal Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Other than that, watch The Evil Dead 2.
Watch it.
It's amazing. Absolutely. It's wonderful. I love Bruce Campbell with all of my heart.
And then continue watching more Evil Dead afterwards.
I will continue. I am literally, once we get up from this table, I am going to go watch Ash vs. the Evil Dead.
Awesome. And smoke a joint. Yeah, And if it's not on Netflix, the Starz login is in our docs.
It's not.
Huh?
It's not on the password document. I looked. You were a lying liar who lied.
No, fuck. I had to change it. I'll update it. I'll update it right now. Fucking update.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Anyway, thank you so much, everyone, for listening. If you like what you heard, please, please, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. It helps keep us afloat and keeps us relevant on all of the charts on iTunes. We don't like giving into the corporate overlords over at iTunes, but we need to.
Yep.
For the time being, anyway. And if you want to stay up to date on all the latest and greatest going on our podcast universe, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Horror People Pod. And then you can find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE People's Podcast. And then if you want to follow Anthony, you can. He is on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And then you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop.
Damn.
And I think the last final announcement, we have a website, or at least we're working on one.
Oh, yeah, website coming. We've been trying to do this forever, but has been fucking us.
So right now we just have a little landing page up, but if you want to go look at it, we are at horrorpeoplepod.com.
Yeah.
So check us out.
Support our domain.
At least just go look at it.
Yeah. There will be content soon.
Yeah. Ooh, spooky.
Spooky content. Ooh.
So, that's all we have for you this week. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. You guys are awesome. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and we'll catch you next week.
Peace out, fuckers.
Bye, guys.